Hey, Reg, how you doing, my friend? All right, let's get this microphone higher up here. What's the story? Somebody has, like Goldilocks, somebody's been sitting in my chair. Okay, we ready to go, my friend? All right, put it down into the book. 412, episode 412. Well, no hesitation. Whoops, there you go. Let's just get started with this thing. What do you say? Okay. Stars, smile, strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Wait, sorry. I got something stuck in my... something stuck in my tooth there, my friend. I don't want to be spitting stuff out as I'm talking, okay? All right, now everything is discharged from my mouth. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. But don't forget, listening is a key element, but a close number two is also your involvement to get out there. Spread the word and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And what the heck? Why isn't it theirs? It should be. Tell them. Force them to listen. Send them a link. Sit them down. Put earphones on their head. Hit play. And just make them sit there for an hour. Guarantee you by the end of that time, they'll be laughing and smiling and nodding their head. If you or they like what you hear, don't forget, you go to WGNRadio.com, you go to the podcast section, you hit the prompt for this podcast, and then you hit the mother load. Podcast after podcast after podcast in the last couple of weeks to the last couple of years. Just keep scrolling down and loading more. I'm recording more. In fact, right now, I'm recording episode number 412. 412. So, where were you when the lights went out? For about 3.5 or 4 minutes. About a week ago today. Where were you? Yes, it was the Great American Eclipse. A week later, and I don't even know, aside from me, is anybody even talking about this anymore? I mean, we have talk about a disposable culture. My gosh, for the last couple of weeks leading up to this, and even before that, all we were hearing was the eclipse, the eclipse, the eclipse. And if I hear, if I hear the phrase path of totality one more time, aside from, you know, I've always said I'd like to be in a band. If I start a band, that's going to be my band name. Good evening, everyone. We are Path of Totality. Thank you. Good night. Path of Totality. Wow. How many times did you hear that over the last, certainly the last, you know, 2 weeks before Monday, the April 8th, but oh my goodness, path of totality, path of totality, path of totality, oy vey. The media, I love when the media gets a hold of a scientific phrase and then in an effort to sound knowledgeable, they use it, and then it catches on, and then they use it ad nauseum because That's the official phraseology, and they want to sound like they know what they're talking about, and they've done their research, and they're up on everything. And of course, if they're interviewing a, you know, in the case of the eclipse, they're interviewing an astronomer. They want to sound educated and up to date on the key phrases. So path of totality. Oh my gosh. I mean, the sports people on the newscasts were saying path of totality for no reason. Actually, ironically, the Chicago White Sox were in, and now look at me. I'm complaining and I'm doing it. The White Sox were directly in the path of totality, playing a baseball game in the afternoon in Cleveland. So they were in the path. So I guess the sports director or the sports anchor had, if you're in Chicago at least, had a legitimate reason to use the term path of totality. But my gosh, if I never hear that phrase again, I would be very happy. Wow. And that, of course, referred to where you would be able to see the eclipse in its totality, if you will, when the moon would completely cover the sun. And in many areas around the country, for instance, here in the Chicago area, I believe that we had a 94% coverage. So there was a little sliver of the sun still showing in Chicago. If you went downstate into Carbondale and a lot of the southern areas where it kind of starting in Dallas, and well, actually started in Mexico. I think it was in Mazatlan where it first appeared, and then it came up, but it was mostly the southern and northern parts, or the southern and Midwest, and then it went off into the more northern parts up by the Buffalo, and then Maine, and then off into the ocean. And as we've learned, we know way too much about eclipses than we ever needed to know. It's nice to know about them, but you know, as we know, apparently these things happen all the time. They just happen over over water. The world is 70%, 75% water. So a lot of times an eclipse will happen and no one's there to see it. If an eclipse happens and no one sees it, does it really happen? Interesting. Yeah, so we were, United States, of course, it was termed the Great Eclipse because, of course, it was primarily seen in the United States over a 15-state path of totality. There I go again. Hey, might as well use it, right? Well, I can, even though I'm tired of it. But 15 states or so were in the line. How about that? How about the line of the eclipse? I'm going to use that, the line of eclipse. It doesn't sound as scientific, I guess, as the path of totality, but the line of the eclipse is exactly what it was. And there were 15 states in the line of the eclipse where it would have an effect, where you would see the moon going in front of the sun, and in many states and in many places, complete darkness occurring. I have to admit, I'm sure you're listening and saying, Jim, is there anything in the world that you like? Yes, there are. It's just that I don't talk about them on the podcast because where's the interest in that? No, I'm looking at things that are happening, and if I've got some kind of a contrarian viewpoint, then that's interesting. That hopefully compels you to listen. I know that sometimes it might be like, geez, this guy never talks about anything positive. I do, believe me, in my personal life, I talk about positive things. Admittedly, not a lot, but I've always said how I always watch Curb Your Enthusiasm as almost a documentary or an autobiography, the Larry David character, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but I certainly do track with the Larry David character on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I must say, it's very sad to have seen that show come to an end last week on April 7th. Maybe I'll talk about that in a future podcast, because I think it really was one of the, if not the best sitcoms in the last 25 years. And ironically, I would certainly put Seinfeld into that category, and both created and written by Larry David, which is quite an accomplishment when you think of the fact that he was certainly in his late 30s or early 40s by the time, I believe he's 76 now. So I think Seinfeld started in was about 89 or 90 when it really started. So that's what, 34 years ago. So he was in his 40s. He certainly, by comic standards, he was past his prime for all intents and purposes. And yet, certainly a late bloomer, but my gosh, when he bloomed, did he bloom. And as I said, the guiding force behind both Seinfeld and now Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David. But yes, no, there are. I am happy about things. I am positive about things. But I do tend, as I've said many times here, I do tend to bristle and step back away from big event type things. When there's a lot of people into something, I tend to shy away from it. It's not about that actual event anymore. It's about being a part of the event. And I'm not a big joiner. I like to be a part of something. I'm an anomaly. What can I say? I like being a part of something, but at the same time, I'm not a big joiner. So I don't know. That's why, I mean, you know, I should probably be on a shrink's couch somewhere. But but no, so I would think that if you've listened to this podcast with any kind of regularity, you would expect me not to be that excited about the eclipse. Now let me just preface this by saying, the eclipse itself, the phenomenon of it, and the presence of it, I am intrigued by, I am in awe of, and that I do share with many people who saw it. It is quite a big bowl of phenomenon to digest here as to how we fit in this ridiculous universe and galaxy and everything else. And sometimes we here on Earth, we think that everything revolves around Earth, and we've gotten to the point in our society where we think everything revolves around us. And it's events like the eclipse, which hopefully, even temporarily, even for the 3 or 4 minutes that the total darkness in many of the places where the totality occurred, even if it's fleeting, which it seems to have been fleeting. I mean, it's a week later. I don't hear anybody talking about it anymore. Everybody was planning ahead for it. At the moment of it, there were the squeals and the hugging and the kissing and the spirituality, attached to this. And then it was over, and everybody just dispersed. And after the next day, I didn't hear anybody talking about it. And here we are a week later, and I don't hear anyone talking about the eclipse or how they've changed or how their lives are changed or how they were. I mean, we've moved on. We are such a disposable society in today's world. We hype stuff to the nth degree, and then after it happens, We just turn off and look to the next thing. You know, I worked in public relations for about 10 years, and when I did, you know, the concern, especially if you were in any kind of a crisis communication situation, was, you know, how do we move the story away? How do we get control of the story? How do we stop the story, especially if it's a negative thing? You know, we don't want to keep giving it legs so that it continues to move on. We want to confront it. We want to address it. We want to talk about it, be honest with it, admit if there was any kind of responsibility, talk about how we're going to work to make sure it doesn't happen again. And hopefully that's the end of it. And so the concern here was, how do we get in front of this story? Or if we can't, how do we put an end to it so we don't continue, so we don't give it legs? It doesn't continue to keep moving and moving and become something that people are always talking about. How do we get the focus off of it and onto something else? I haven't worked in public relations now for quite a while, but I would assume now that many of the strategies that I and others in the profession at that time used to employ are obsolete. You know, I was out of public relations by the time social media came, and I would think all the rules have to be rewritten, because there in today's world we don't focus on anything. It burns hot. And then if there's another burning fire, we forget about that one and we move on. For instance, you tell me, what's happening in Hawaii after that big fire? Do we know anything that's going on in Lahaina, in Maui? If I asked you right now, what's the progress going on? Has the city been rebuilt? Is it still in the state of confusion? Is it in the state of rubble? Can you tell me? But my gosh, when Lahaina was burning, that's all you heard about. And now we don't even know it existed. And here was this eclipse. All you were hearing about for weeks was the preparations and the towns that were in the line of the eclipse. The cities and towns that were in the line to have the totality. They, of course, were gearing up for big, big tourist revenue to come in. And you were hearing all about, the hotel rooms were filled. The parking spaces were being $25 to $50 to park in a spot. Just even though you could just stop wherever you were and look up. For some reason, people went to a spot and paid for a parking space when the sky is free. You could just stand somewhere and get your little goggles on and look up. You didn't need to go to any place. That was the great irony of this entire thing too. Now, when I look at this, as I said, when it was becoming such a phenomena, a media event, that's when I got turned off by it, which is a shame, because. And I will tell you right now, no, I did not travel anywhere. I'm in the Chicago area. I have neighbors and friends who traveled 2 or 3 hours, in some cases even farther, 6 or 7 or 8 hours away to experience this. I didn't even walk outside my house. I didn't even go downtown. Everybody, what I loved is, for some reason, I understand the reason, but it wasn't going to be any better there than anywhere else. But here in the Chicago area, we have a planetarium, talking about astronomy, the Adler Planetarium. It's out by the lake. It's in a nice little museum campus kind of area. But you didn't see it any better or any worse at the Adler Planetarium than you would in your backyard, wherever you lived in the Chicago area. But for some reason, people were compelled to go to the Adler Planetarium because, well, that's where you can learn about planets. And this eclipse is about the moon and the sun. And so I should go to where the planet, even though it's just, they didn't go inside. There was no reason to be at the planetarium except for some kind of mood, maybe. But nothing else. In terms of the actual viewing of the planetarium, you could have stayed in your yard and seen it the same way in your yard as that you did if you went down to the planetarium. But yet, thousands of people congregated at the Adler Planetarium because this was a planetary event. So that made sense. But it really didn't make sense. As I said, I saw on the news here locally, Carbondale, Illinois, in the southern part of the state, was another spot where it would be in the line of the eclipse. And 13,000 people congregated in one of the Southern Illinois University football stadium. As I said, where I think the parking lot was filled with $25 parking, and people sitting all together in a stadium. Why? It wasn't any better at the stadium than it would be in your yard if you were in Carbondale. The sky is huge. You didn't need to be in this congregated place, but the media attention to this created this kind of event, and with that becomes this communal event. But if you really wanted to see it, you could just step outside of your house. Now, like I said, I became kind of, as this grew, it became this media event. As I said many times, I bristle from that. So no, I did look out the window and noticed it got a little. I mean, here in Chicago, we didn't get the darkness like we did, like people did in some areas. But it did get a little shadier. I did notice that. But I never bought the glasses or picked up a pair of glasses for free, and I didn't go outside my yard. And you say, "Well, Jim, you're just being now you're just being negative and obstinate." No. I saw it better, I think, on television. And I saw so many people. I mean, that's all you were hearing about was as I was watching the telecasts, both local and national. I'm watching all you're hearing about for weeks before the eclipse is, you got to wear those glasses. You can't look at it. It will do damage. You'll put blisters on your eyes. Your retinas don't feel any pain. You won't even know what's happening. I mean, all these eye warnings. And while I'm watching the coverage, and while it's happening, I'm seeing everybody without their glasses on looking up at it. And I know there was a point when it was dark when you were safe to look at it, but I'm talking about right after when the totality ended and when the moon started to move again, people were still looking up without their glasses, straight at it. Even some of the commentators who were always, beforehand. Now, don't forget, you can get your free goggles, you can get your free glasses, and you need to wear those because this could be very dangerous. For weeks, they were sending out the warnings of becoming blind or getting some serious eye damage. And then when it happened, there they were with their microphones and their cameras aimed at them, and they're looking up at the sky. It's unbelievable. So, yeah, to me, what I got a sense of as I was watching this, and as I was hearing now, they were talking about in Niagara Falls. Once again, no real reason to go to Niagara Falls. It wasn't as if that this, if you went to Niagara Falls, it was going to look any better than if you were in somewhere in upstate New York around that area and walked outside into your yard. It wouldn't have been any different. However, for some reason, because it was going to be passing over the Niagara Falls area, everybody said, oh, well, wouldn't it be cool to see the eclipse at Niagara Falls? To the point where the town of Niagara Falls was fearing this huge influx of people that was going to cause major traffic jams, potentially gas shortages. I know somebody that went, I'm not sure where they went, but he told me he drove 8 hours from the Chicago area, 8 hours. And it took him 12 hours to get home. I mean, for a 4 minute experience. And he said, yeah, it was cool. I got some pictures of it and I got some, and it did get dark, but my gosh, I believe me, I am in awe and amazed by nature more than the average person, because I actually believe that Mother Nature is in charge of everything. I really believe that. We always think that we control things, and Mother Nature on a daily basis with tornadoes and hurricanes and floods and everything else always proves who's in charge. I've said this on this podcast and every other place that anybody will listen to me for years, for decades, that to me, I think the most arrogant phrase, pop culture phrase, made popular by the Hard Rock Cafe for some reason, was save the planet. The most arrogant phrase ever created. Sounds good. Sounds great. But the most arrogant, narcissistic, and completely incorrect phrase there ever is. It's a good rallying cry. It makes people feel good, but it is completely inaccurate and completely arrogant. We cannot save the planet. We do not have that capacity. We do not have domain over the planet. The planet has domain over us. The planet will be fine. If you want to stop climate change, what you're ultimately trying to do is stop the climate change in order to keep the human race sustained. If you want to say save the human race, I agree with you, because that's what's in danger. The planet is not in danger. This planet has been around for billions of years. It will continue to be around for billions of years. We as a species have not been here that long. And as we know by history, most of the species on this planet do not last. And that's what we can't get our heads around, because we're the main species in the last several million years that has the ability to think and has logic and reason. All the other species, plants, animals, run on instinct. Their brains don't work that way. We have a heightened brain, and it's been, as I said many times, it's our greatest asset and our greatest detriment. But we cannot save the planet. Our job is self-preservation to save mankind. But wow, that sounds a little too heavy. And it also sounds like, whoa, we're in trouble here. So we are transposing that and using our sense of superiority that we can save the planet. Shame on us. This planet on a daily basis proves who's in charge. Nature is in charge. We are strictly inhabitants here. We do not run or guide. We contribute positively or negatively, but the planet responds, as it always has, to the elements around it, just as it did when there were no people here, or there were much fewer people here. You want to save the planet? I'll tell you how you do it in a second. There's too many people. That's why the planet is reacting the way it is. The first time in the history of this planet, it's got 8 billion people on it. And it's reacting to the amount of people on it and the way those people exist and use up its resources. And so it is reacting to that. But we're not saving the planet. So as I said, I believe I have more of a respect for nature than a lot of other people do who apply a spirituality or a domain. The worst thing that happened in the Bible was whoever was writing the Bible said, and God gave man dominion over the animals. That was the worst line of the Bible, because it gave man a sense of superiority over everything, as if we were running things. We are not running things. In fact, we are one of the most fragile species on this planet. And we're proving that every day. And ultimately, I believe that we're going to wind up self-destructing. But we're not here. We can't save the planet. We could try to make it more livable, but the planet's in charge. Nature is in charge. All you have to do is look around and see the tornadoes and the floods and the hurricanes. And we react to them. They don't react to us. They're in charge. Save the planet. False. Save mankind. More accurate. So believe me, I'm in awe when a phenomenon like an eclipse happens, because it is a reminder of where we are in this grand scheme. And we are so, so minuscule in the totality, and there's that word again, of the universe. And the eclipse should remind us of our fallibility, of our unimportance. When I was seeing all of this hype going on, and then when I was watching the coverage, all I could think of, and I mean, there were some places where you could really get the entire totality. I mean, there were schools were closing, people were off of work. It became like 4th of July. It was an unofficial holiday, and families, you know, once again, there was that the whole, you know, family aspect. Well, we're getting together to share this experience, and then there was the spirituality of this. Oh my goodness, the spirituality. We were applying so many meanings to this, man-made meanings. When the real meaning, when you watch that eclipse is wow. Are we unimportant here? Because this planet and other planets and our solar system are completely in charge of what happens to us. That sun is in charge of us. The atmosphere around this planet is in charge of us. We are not in charge of anything here. If anything, you should have looked at that eclipse and felt very small. But we were applying these meanings to make it, and it exalted us. I watched all the celebrations, all the people getting together, and I get it. You know, we're a social animal. As I said, the logic of it didn't make sense. You could walk outside your house and look up in the sky and see the same way. But we love to congregate. We love to make an event out of something. When I was watching it, to me, it looked like New Year's Eve in the afternoon. You know how New Year's Eve is once again this man-made holiday, this man-made event where ultimately we celebrate the ticking of a clock. There's no intrinsic value to this. There's nothing, but we have applied some value to it. Just like this eclipse, there's no intrinsic value to that. There's no special meaning. We love to put special meanings to things, whether they are spiritual, whether they are communal. We love to you know, people were crying and hugging and everything. We love to put these deeper meanings, but ultimately that was just business as usual for the universe. Business as usual for the galaxy. The moon is moving. It revolves, and for a moment there, it gets right in front of the sun, in front of the earth. It's an everyday occurrence. It's business as usual for the galaxy. We have to apply these momentous meanings to them. Most of them completely contrived just to make us feel better. But it felt to me like New Year's Eve, except it was in the afternoon. It was sunny, except for 4 minutes or 3 minutes, whatever the darkness may have been wherever you were. But that's what it seemed like. It was just, okay, we're all going to celebrate this, and it happened. And once, what happens at New Year's? There's all this great excitement. There's going to be this big party. You're going to get all dressed up. You're going to go somewhere. Bop, 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 boop, boop, boop. You watch the ball fall in New York. You do the countdown here. And then by 12:10, you look around and go, well, now what do I do? And that's the way the eclipse was. It was New Year's Eve in the afternoon. And we were still watching a ball. On New Year's Eve, we watch a ball fall. On the eclipse, we watch the ball move. But aside from that, we were still watching a ball. But it happened, and then it was done, and then everybody just, there was this moment of silence, this moment of awe, this moment of darkness if you were in that path. And then it got sunny again. And you got back in your car and you gave somebody the finger and you had a beer, whatever it was. And then we were done. Just like New Year's. Okay, it's 12:10. It's now the next year. And now what do I do? So, look, if you went out somewhere and you traveled, more power to you. I'm not putting that down. I'm just standing outside of it for a second and observing it. I think it's great. If you got together with your family and made a trip out of this and you got your things, you know what? That's great. You found a reason to get together with your family. Hey, look, you know, both my parents have passed away. I would love to have gotten together with my parents perhaps and watched it, but I can't, okay? So if you have that ability to get together with your kids or your parents or whatever it is and experience this eclipse and make it this kind of communal experience for you and this big memory that you would have, that's great. I have no problem with it. But at the same time, let's also bring some reality to it. I'm sorry if I'm always bringing reality. I know reality isn't fun. I guess I'm a killjoy in that because I look at things the way they kind of are as opposed to this kind of misty, I don't even know what the word is. It's not optimism. It's just this misty way of looking. But ultimately what happened was everyday business for the galaxy happens all the time. The moon is moving around the earth. The earth is moving around the sun. This eclipse, this alignment of planets happens all the time. But we make t-shirts and we make money off of that. What it really was, in my view, aside from New Year's Eve in the afternoon, inside of watching a ball, instead of falling on New Year's Eve, a ball moving across the sky, it was really a triumph for science. that I think we should, if there's a takeaway from this eclipse, that's what I think the takeaway should be. Not the spirituality. I'm hearing people on television, oh, my mom that passed away is, you know, I mean, that when I heard some of the people applying some of this bigger meaning to this eclipse, it made me realize just how little we have really learned as a civilization. Because those are the same kind of things that ancient people with no knowledge, no access to telescopes, no understanding of how the solar system worked. Ancient people saw this eclipse and they applied these kind of supernatural and spiritual and world-ending kind of applications and meanings to this, when we know that all it is and is a momentary aligning of planets and heavenly bodies. That's what it is. But I'll give the people who lived in ancient times, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt because they didn't have any knowledge of this. They didn't know what the heck was going on. They had no they didn't know what that sun was or that moon was or what was going on. 1400 years into our existence, and we still thought the earth was flat. 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. There's still some people today that think the earth is flat. But what an accomplishment, science. This was a triumph for science. Because think about the reality of this. The astronomers, NASA, everybody that was talking about this eclipse, they predicted when that eclipse was going to happen in the path of totality. They predicted it by almost to the second, certainly to the minute or two, of when that would happen all across these different states. They predicted that. They have the knowledge. It's predictable. It's verifiable. It's not an anomaly. It happens constantly, so much so that they could predict it. It's not like the weather. How many times does a weatherman say, oh, it's going to rain today, and it's sunny and not a cloud in the sky? But these astronomers, they predicted, and these scientists, not only did they say, oh, by the way, an eclipse is going to happen, but they actually pinpointed, as much as I want to laugh about the phrase, the path of totality, they actually predicted months in advance where this path of totality would exist, when it would appear in each of those cities that they plotted out, and how long it would last. And they got it down almost to the second, certainly to the minute. Now that is something to celebrate. That is something to be amazed at. That we have that kind of knowledge and ability to look out into the galaxy and predict what it will do. It's still in charge. We didn't make it happen, but we have the knowledge and the insight to at least understand what's happening around us. But people didn't look at it that way. I don't think people talked about, wow, what a great scientific achievement this entire eclipse event was. What a triumph for science. But that's what it was. It wasn't about spirituality. It wasn't about having a barbecue. We should have been celebrating the fact that as a human civilization, we have progressed so much in our understanding and in our knowledge and in our capability that we can look into the heavens, which used to be a complete mystery to humans. They had to assign meanings to it to understand it. The sun gods, the rain gods, rain dances, they didn't understand. That's why I give them a pass. But here we are in the 21st century. We predicted this eclipse almost 100%. And yet, for most people that viewed it, they didn't think of the scientific achievement that was. They applied some other very basic understanding, almost an ancient. Most people looked at it the same way that people tens of thousands of years ago, hundreds of thousands of years ago looked at it. Instead of marveling at our accomplishment of our knowledge, we looked at it and we were crying, oh my God, my mom is watching and all this stuff. Instead of saying, wow, what a day for science. Well done, NASA. Well done, astronomers. Well done, scientists. Ultimately, what it became was a FOMO moment. It was a FOMO event. Fear of missing out. Why did so many people leave their houses when they could simply go into their backyard and see the same thing? Why did so many people get their glasses? Why did so many people take a day off from work? Why did so many people have barbecues? Why did so many people go to the Adler Planetarium? Why did so many people go to Niagara Falls? Why did so many people go to the Carbondale Stadium? FOMO. Fear of missing out. I asked you at the top of this podcast, where were you when the lights went out, at least for 3 or 4 minutes? Were you at home? Were you at work? Were you looking up at the sky? Were you in a crowded area with a bunch of people? Were you by yourself? I think most people became eclipse aware because they didn't want to miss out. Because there was something big going on and they didn't want to miss out on it. That's what social media has turned us into. We don't do anything anymore for the sheer experience or fun of it. We do it so we can document that we were there. I was hearing so many people say, you know, I was at the eclipse in 2017 and now I'm at this one. Yeah. And? ... For me, I think it was a chance for people. We're still going through COVID withdrawals in many ways. I mean, it's hard to believe now we're past the 4-year mark of when COVID appeared and shut down. 4 years ago today, As a society, almost as a world, we were shut down. And the majority of the world, right here, on April 15th, was shut down 4 years ago. And really, it's only been the last 2 years when we've really began to open up and become more of a social society than we were for those first 2 years of COVID. So I think we're still going through a withdrawal. We are looking for reasons to congregate, to socialize. We are social animals. And we will look for any reason to get together. And so here's this phenomenon. It only, you know, we get all the hype of it. It only happens like the next one now, at least in the United States, or wherever is going to happen in 20, 2044, and I heard the last time for Chicago for to be invisible in any way in Chicago would be 2099, right? So we're getting all these facts, which once again, kudos to science, because in 2044, I guarantee you, they're going to be talking about it again. I mean, look at the amount of knowledge and ability we have. We are able to calculate this 20 years out when that's going to happen again. As I said before, the ancient people, when this happened, they didn't know what the heck. Why is it dark in the middle of the afternoon? Oh, my gosh. God is mad at us. What's happening? They had to apply these supernatural, because they didn't understand what they were or where they were, how they were. And we still don't even understand that. But at least we have more knowledge than they do, but we don't use it because we're still applying ancient thoughts. We have moved forward technologically, incredible leaps and bounds. But culturally, we haven't moved an inch in how we react. Because people were acting the other day while they looked at that eclipse in the same way that ancient people did. Instead of saying, wow, now that is quite a spectacular event. And wow, think about how we've progressed, that we were able to predict when that was going to happen. And it came true. But I think not only are we going through a COVID socializing withdrawal that we're looking for anything to get together and celebrate as a group, not only from COVID, but also because I think the impacts finally are being understood and being felt by the isolation that the smartphone and social media has created in our culture. We are becoming more isolated beings, and I believe at our core, in our code, in our DNA, we are social animals, and yet the prevailing technology of the day is forcing us to be more individualized and isolated, and we're fighting with that. So I think we're trying to go out of our way to create social events. That's why we're feeling FOMO, the fear of missing out, because we wonder what's going on. Where is everyone else at? And as I said, I think there's also a pressure, a peer pressure, a societal pressure to always be somewhere, always be doing something. You know, document every minute of your day online to show your worth, to show your to be noticed. It's getting crazy. And so we were taking day. I mean, one minute we are talking about the importance of education. All you hear about in education, 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 kids going to school, test scores are down, grades are down. Our educational system, kids going to college, education, 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 education. And don't get me wrong, I think that's important. But then when the moon gets in front of the sun, you can take a day off. That's how much we value education. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's important that my kid gets an education. But if the sun is going to be blocked by the moon for 4 minutes, I'm taking my kid out of school. We have to have a barbecue. We have to drive 5 hours. That's how important education is all suddenly. Oh, it's just a day. Well, you know what? That sends a message. When your parents take you out of school to see a natural phenomenon that's going to happen, it happens all the time, that kind of sends a message of how important they think school is. Don't think that doesn't get registered somewhere, because it does. So all we're worried about is education. But then when the moon blocks the sun for 4 minutes, school holiday. If there's an inch of snow on the ground, snow day. You know, that adds up. It kind of begins to show where their priorities are. But I really think, aside from it being New Year's in the afternoon, I think this hoopla about the eclipse really showed how desperate we are right now. We are really culturally desperate because the world around us is not in a good place. And we are desperate to feel good about anything, about something. Because we look around and there is destruction, there are wars, there's people being killed on our streets, there's people being killed by governments. We are seeing economic problems. We're looking around, we're seeing, you know, natural disasters, and we're looking around the world and going, wow. It's not a happy place out there right now. And so here's this thing, this occurrence that doesn't happen all the time, that we suddenly heighten its importance and we apply deeper meanings to it than they really need to have. Deeper meanings for the event itself and deeper meanings for how we interpret it. Because I think ultimately we are desperate for fun. We're desperate for something nice. We're desperate for something good. And we'll cling to anything. What do you got? Oh, you mean the moon is going to go in front of the sun for 4 minutes? Hey, let's have a party. We are so desperate right now for good news, for something good, because our headlines, the world around us is in such a state of flux. It's such a transitional time. It's such a time of chaos. And there is no light at the end of the tunnel. The Ukrainian war is not any closer to being settled today than it was 2 years ago. The conflict now in Gaza is no closer than to of being settled today as it was now 6 months ago. We're past the 6 months mark, 6 month mark. And we've had more catastrophes happen because of the Hamas terrorist attack, which lit this tinderbox, which started this whole thing. And we've got different viewpoints on who's at fault and what should be done. But my point is, we're not close to any resolution of those. Of those are two main things, but there's things going on all over the place. We're, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but gas is over $4 again. About a month ago, it was closer to $3. Gas prices have slowly trickled up again. I wonder, is there a holiday coming up? Is there Memorial Day coming up? Is that a time when people drive their cars and use more gas? Could that be why the gas prices are going up? We're looking everywhere, and there's very few rays of sunshine. So what did we do last week? We celebrated the lack of sunshine for 4 minutes, ironically. We're looking for rays of sunshine in our lives and in our world right now. And the best that we could do was find when there would be a big dark shadow over us. We've had a shadow over us for several years already. But we celebrated 4 minutes of shadow in the middle of the day. And then, as I said before, a week later, I don't hear anybody talking about the eclipse anymore. I don't hear anybody saying how it changed their lives. Oh, in that 4 minutes, that's all you were hearing about. Spirituality, hugging, kissing, family, all that stuff. And then when the moon moved away and the sunshine came out, it just, you know what happened? It became Monday again. Because you know what? The sun has been setting and rising and it's been getting dark since the beginning of time. And so after the 4 minutes, it just became another sunny Monday day. Just a sunny Monday. If you were in the path of totality and it passed you by and you were finished with the 4 minutes, then suddenly the great eclipse of 2024 became Monday. So as I said before, if you found any profound meaning for it, more power to you. If you used it as a day to get together with friends and family, as an excuse to do that, and you felt good about it, no problem with that. But I guess my job is to sort of stand a little away from it and bring a little reality to it. And as I said before, maybe bring a different mindset to it. Instead of applying all these superficial type of internal meanings that try to give to make us feel good about it. To me, what the eclipse really was a triumph for science. I'd like to think of all those people over the last several years who were anti-science, who didn't want to get vaccinated with COVID, who were putting down the doctors and the scientists who were trying their best to curtail this pandemic. And people were vehemently against scientists and doctors and medicine. And I guarantee you, many of those same people were out there with their goggles on, looking at the sun and looking at the moon. What they were really doing was they were depending on and putting their faith in science. Do they even realize that? If you were looking up at the sun at the time they said, here in Chicago, it was supposed to be 2:07, but you were in a spot where it was totality and it was going to get dark, and they said it's going to happen at 1:52. If you went someplace to be in that, if you were in the line of the eclipse, if you were in the path of totality, and you went to if you drove 3 miles or you flew 7 hours away to go to someplace and be there at that time, when the scientists told you it would be there, you ultimately were putting your faith in science, because that's who told you about it. Those same people that told you about the vaccine to stop a pandemic, they were in the same business, different part of science, but still scientists. So at the end of the day, what we were really doing was putting our faith in science so that we went somewhere thinking and knowing, and then it happened exactly when they said it was. So I don't look at it as some spiritual thing. I don't look at it as some family memory. I look at the eclipse as a triumph for science. Well done in making us aware of this phenomenon, making us appreciate it, and predicting it right down to the second. Wow. Now that's something worth celebrating. That's something worth saying about the human race, about the human civilization, how we have moved forward. Instead of applying ancient fables and ancient feelings about this. We should be looking at that. When that eclipse happened, what I thought was, wow, they predicted it to the second. Now that's saying something, because thousands of years ago, hundreds of thousands of years ago, we looked up at that and had no idea when it was going to happen, how it was going to happen, or why it happened. And now we knew exactly what it was, why it was, how it was, and even more incredibly, when it was, to the minute. Now that's something to celebrate. That's something to put your glasses on and look up and say, well done. And also realize just how unimportant we really are. The eclipse was a holiday for many, but for the universe, it was just another Monday. New Year's Eve in the afternoon. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 412. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.